friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yabrow. I'm still here having a great time filling in for Sonny Young. Let's get into the October 2nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Kicking off the show, we have Prince Nesta, who joins us to provide updates on the weekend's roundup of football action from Europe's biggest leagues. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, McBeal. English striker of Nigerian descent Bukayo Saka's goal, two penalty strikes from Kai Havertz and Martin Odegaard, and a Ben White header helped Arsenal secure a 4-0 win against Bournemouth on the South Coast. The win helped the Gunners extend the unbeaten start to the season, while the Cherries sank deep into the relegation zone as they await their first win this season. Saka has now scored 5 goals and assisted 2 in 7 out of his last 8 Premier League appearances for Arsenal. He's also scored 22 out of all the 24 teams he has played against in the competition, with Leicester and Burnley being the only exceptions. Here's Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta sharing thoughts on his team's performance.
Well, very happy, very happy the way we approached the game. Since yesterday, I think the team was ready to play. We knew about the challenge that we had ahead of us against a team that I think they don't have what they deserve in terms of the game that they have played. They don't give you any time. The ball is always under pressure, small ground, very difficult to get out of that. But I think we read the game really well and the right to win it.
That's Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta speaking after his team's comfortable victory against Bournemouth in the Premier League. A late injury time on goal by Joel Matip saw Tottenham record a late 2-1 victory over 9-man Liverpool in a fiercely contested Premier League encounter played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Dutch striker of Ghanaian descent Cody Gakpo had earlier equalised for the Reds following Spurs talisman Son Heung-min's opening goal in the 36th minute. Curtis Jones and Diogo Jota both received red cards during the match. Liverpool previously managed to squeeze out wins with 10 men in their games against Bournemouth and Newcastle United, but unfortunately failed to turn the tide against Spurs. The German tactician Jürgen Klopp shared thoughts on his team's performance.
I don't think there's anything to say about the offside goal. I knew it half-time. I, in the first moment, I thought it's clear on offside, but then it was offside. I tried to think they have a better view. Half-time, we knew with normal pictures, easy to see, no offside. But I'm pretty sure that whoever did that, made that decision, didn't do it on purpose. It didn't take extremely long to come to the conclusion. That's a bit strange, but that somebody else has to clarify that. I have nothing else to say about it.
Spurs' new boss, Ange Postecoglou, also shared thoughts on his team's performance.
Yeah, look, we're at that stage. Obviously, you want to be winning for sure, but more importantly, it's about, you know, how we're performing. And, you know, I thought the start of the game was pretty even, and then obviously they got the red card, and I thought, you know, after we scored, we didn't handle that too well in that first half, and, you know, we kind of rushed things and didn't play our football, didn't stay calm, and we allowed them back in the game and they got the equaliser. I thought second half was a lot better in terms of just we were more calm and persistent with our football. But then, yeah, you know, when they went down to 9, you know, they obviously, they're a top team, and, you know, they've got top mentality. They've been a top side for a while, and they made it hard for us. And, you know, we didn't really vary our attacks as much as we could. Having said that, I mean, Alisson's pulled off some unbelievable saves. So it's all part of it for us. It's all part of the learning curve of how to deal with something like that.
Then Spurs head coach Ange Postecoglou speaking after his team's win against Liverpool in the Premier League. Champions Manchester City were humbled after suffering a shock 2-1 loss to Wolverhampton Wanderers at the Molineux Stadium. The Citizens had won all of their 6 opening Premier League games this season, but Ruben Dias's own goal and a bending free kick by Hang Hee-chan sealed victory for Wolves. Julian Alvarez scored City's consolation goal. Here's City boss Pep Guardiola.
Congratulations, Wolves. They defend really well. We have our moments. I know counting the last 10-15 because it was more difficult. We didn't do properly our process to attack a little bit more fluidity, and that's why we struggled a little bit. And just the transitions, Neto was better than us, so they beat us in that situation because we were not disorganized. We were in the position that we could defend well, but difficult game to play, like we knew it.
and they defend really well, and congratulations.
That's Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola speaking after his team's loss against Wolverhampton Wanderers in the Premier League. In another fixture, Joachim Andersen's goal gave Crystal Palace a 1-0 win over Giants. Manchester United, who suffered their second successive defeat at Old Trafford this season. The Red Devils have now lost 4 of their last 7 Premier League games, their worst ever start after 7 games in 34 years. The Eagles are currently 9th in the table, with United dropping to 10th. Here's United's under fire boss Erik ten Hag's verdict on his team's performance.
Yeah, very disappointed, of course, when you concede only 3 chances, 3 from set plays, and one is in, and it was so avoidable. And then we were so often in their half, not only in their half, we came also in the right positions in their half, but then and towards the goal, we were poor in decision-making.
Vince Manchester United manager Erik ten Hag speaking after his team's loss against Crystal Palace in the Premier League. Ollie Watkins recorded his second hat-trick this season as Aston Villa thrashed Brighton 6-1 at Villa Park. Newcomers Luton Town also secured their first Premier League victory with a shock 2-1 win over Everton at Goodison Park. Moving on to the French League, French star of Cameroonian descent Kylian Mbappe and his PSG side were held to a 0-0 draw against Lowly Clermont. The Parisians have 12 points after 7 French League games, their lowest start to a season since the 2010-2011 season. French midfielder of Algerian descent Magnus Akliouche and US striker of Nigerian descent Folarin Balogun both registered their names in the score sheet as leaders Monaco beat Marseille by 3-2. Lille secured a 2-0 win against Le Havre, while Zimbabwean midfielder Marshall Munetsi and French defender of Moroccan descent Younes Abdelhamid netted as Hims beat bottom place side Lyon by 2-0. And finally, in the Spanish Liga, goals from Joselu, French midfielder of Cameroonian descent Tchouaméni and Jude Bellingham helped Real Madrid secure a 3-1 win against Girona, while Barcelona still remained unbeaten thanks to a hard-fought 1-0 win against Sevilla. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nesta.
That was Prince Nesta.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Staying with football action, Mike Mbonye spoke with David Kwalima, an African football analyst, and they discussed the decision of the Confederation of African Football to approve the East African joint bid to host the 2027 AFCON Finals. And it is going in the right direction and what it means for the future of AFCON. Let's take a listen.
Well, it's official. East Africa, the 3 East African countries of Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania will play host to the 2027 Africa Cup of Nations. And analysts believe the moves by Presidents William Ruto of Kenya, Samia Suluhu of Tanzania, and Uganda's Yoweri Museveni to champion this bid personally played a significant part in its success. Remember, Nigeria and Benin had put in a bid to also co-host this tournament. Also in the running was Senegal, Algeria, and of course Botswana and Namibia. Reports indicate that the Confederation of African Football Inspectors had agreed that Algeria had the best bid, but then for one reason or another, they settled on Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania to co-host this tournament. It will be the first time, by the way, 3 countries are staging this tournament. Remember, Ghana and Nigeria and also Gabon and Equatorial Guinea have co-hosted this tournament rather in the past. This will certainly be an interesting time because it's the first time East Africa will be hosting this tournament. Well, besides the football, visitors are coming to Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania to watch these games will be assured of a very exciting experience. Remember, this region plays host also to several games parks located in these countries where one can be able to view the big five. I mean, the elephant, the lion, the cheetahs, the tigers. Most of the game parks in East Africa do have these animals, and tourists tend to be attracted to come and see this. Besides, Tanzania's Dar es Salaam city and Zanzibar, alongside Kenya's Mombasa, Lamu, and Diani, have for very many times been voted as Africa's famous tourist destination. So apart from watching the 90 minutes on the pitch, visitors coming to East Africa have a lot to look forward to.
The East African Joint Bid is also known as Pamoja Bid. What does this mean to the people of the affected countries?
Pamoja is a Swahili word meaning we are together. Remember, Swahili is the most spoken language in the region. It's the most consistently spoken language in the region. So these three countries agreed it will be easier to co-host this tournament than place different bids and hope that one of the three bids will win. So remember, there's an African saying that buffaloes do not walk together because they love each other so much, but rather they believe unity is key in fighting real and perceived competitors. So the co-hosting of this tournament by three countries coming in handy and playing a significant role in its success. Remember, eight cities, namely Nairobi in Kenya, Arusha, Dodoma, Zanzibar in Tanzania, Eldoret as well, Kenya, Kampala, Hoima, and Lira in Uganda will be hosting the games. Six stadiums are set to be built from scratch, and a lot of other infrastructure will be spruced up in time for the tournament to start in 2027 June.
What has been the reaction of the people of Tanzania and Uganda, who are co-hosts with Kenya, on CAF's approval of the joint bid?
Everyone in East Africa is understandably excited by the fact that Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania has been selected to host this tournament. Kenya's President William Ruto, for example, is of the opinion that this bid will be the first of positive work that will enable Kenyan football become a continental powerhouse. A bit of an ambitious target, but the president believes that this is possible. Remember, Kenya is already a world beater in the world of athletics, judging by the long-distance athletes who dominate international events. The national sevens rugby team has qualified Olympic Games in Paris in 2024. The national women volleyball team has also qualified for the Olympic Games. Kenyan cricket, you may know, is also one of the best sides in Africa. So football has been somehow the sport that has been lagging behind. But Kenyan President William Ruto, while acknowledging that Kenya has got a bid and will bring these games with no stone left unturned in terms of preparations, has also assured Kenyans to be ready to witness one of the spectacular football tournaments in Africa of all time.
That was David Kwalima, an African football analyst, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the phone from Nairobi, Kenya.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Staying on the pitch with AFCON, there is excitement around East Africa, especially among football fans, after the Confederation of African Football, CAF, announced it had approved the joint bid of Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania to host the AFCON 2027. In Uganda, however, some fans are worried about the poor infrastructure available. They spoke with Mugumi Davis Rakaringi, and here is what they had to say.
My name is Naga Ashamim. It's a very, very huge privilege for our country to host, because business-wise, we're going to benefit as a country. Many people are going to come to watch ball. But the only problem is we don't have stadiums there to do what to host yet. They won't be complete because of the corruption we have. We don't trust our politicians. They're going to bring, okay, the parliament is going to pass funds to construct. Many people are looking at that money to use it for their own personal what benefit. That's my only worry.
My name is Tihira Job, and I am super excited. And as Ugandans, we think it has been high time that we've gotten a chance to host such events. Yes, we can say that when it comes to infrastructure, we're still trying to get there. And I'm pretty sure by the time CAF accepted the joint bid that has Uganda inclusive, it so means that, you know, we must have put there a plan that we're going to build so and so. It gives us a good feeling that as a country and as Ugandans, that our country is also being thought about. East Africa as a region, as a bloc, is also coming on the table of men.
My name is Otto Patrick John. To me, it sounds unrealistic, because by that time, I don't think the stadiums. Right now, we don't have any stadium that has been approved. If at this point, we don't even have a single stadium and they have not yet put any in, I feel like it will be more about eating money than improving and hosting the AFCON. Uganda hosting AFCON, the opportunity would have been given to another country like maybe Rwanda. Because of the infrastructures in place, the hotels alone in Uganda cannot accommodate the people coming for these games.
My name is Isaac and I'm in Kampala, and I like soccer a lot. It would be a very big honor, something worth celebrating if you should know. I've been watching football lately, English football or what, but then Uganda hosting one, it would be a very, 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 very big chance, you know, for we shall be seen, our market shall grow bigger, people will know more about it, people will come to Uganda, the tours, all that. We don't have stadiums that are in the hands of the FIFA, but then I'm very sure the stadiums will come in before the AFCON is maybe kicked off, and we shall play it very well. I know the fans will be there. AFCON will be very good in Uganda.
I know it is a good thing because it will be promoting the country's reputation and all that on international level. And another thing, it creates unity as Africa. We come together, we interact with other people, we get to know other people. Also to promote businesses, because those people are going to come, the officials, the players, the supporters will have to get accommodation that will be promoting domestic business, which is really good. I love it, but I'm worried about the corruption. The corrupt officials will end up using all the money. They'll divert the funds to their personal projects. That's my only worry.
My name is Victoria Nansubuga. There are different countries that could come and like watch it. So that's tourism, that's money for people with businesses around. So it's a very good thing for us. I'm not a football fan, but for our country or any the East African thing, it's really beneficiary to us. Yeah. For like our footballers, they would get endorsements, because if someone comes and they're from a very big team, they could be introduced to someone that is from a very low team. So they would get opportunities to get in contact.
My name is Mark and I'm in Kampala. I'm just excited about the hosting of the AFCON 2027. Yes, we're gonna see stars from different African countries, yeah, that we have been watching on television, Premier League, that's it.
I'm Shai Emmanuel. I am excited about it because it will bring us more opportunities to participate in coming footballs, in coming aspects of playing football. Even in coming, it may give us an advantage of winning AFCON and go for World Cup.
My name is Lul. I'm South Sudanese.
So Uganda, it can be good for be hosting Africa Cup of Nations, so it's not bad.
I'm Johnson Mukara. Well, I'm a soccer fan, first of all. I support Arsenal in the Premier League. And in the National League, I support the Toro United. A lot of bombing will happen, for sure. So I'm a little optimistic about it. Largely, maybe it may get something.
I'm Daisy. Let me say I'm excited because it's really a blessing that they are going to come this side of Uganda. I would be more excited in case I was a fan.
I'm Emmanuel Junior. I am just happy for the first time Uganda hosting a Africa Cup of Nations, which seemed to be impossible, but it has come. That is the one of the excitement I have. Sadio Mane, Joseph Momo Salah, all of them are going to be in Uganda. Moreover, in Uganda, we are going to take that advantage of actually seeing them. Yeah.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 60-80, 15-580, 49-30, 15-165, 15-580, and 17-530 kilohertz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Moving our attention to the rugby pitch, South Africa made it 3 wins out of 4 in the pool stages of the Rugby World Cup in France with a big victory over Tonga. The Springboks' 49-18 victory over the Tongans on Sunday sees them climb to the top of Pool B. It's not yet job done for South Africa as far as qualifying for the quarterfinals is concerned. Myron Nacker has more from Durban, South Africa. Sporty greetings, Myron.
Sporty greetings from sunny Durban, McBeal. South Africa headed into their clash against Tonga in Marseille with a clear objective. They wanted to score 4 or more tries to secure a bonus point victory over the Pacific Islanders. And that they did at a packed Stade Velodrome. They scored 7 tries to Tonga's 3, convincingly securing victory. Springbok head coach Shark Nidaba was pleased with his side's professional attitude.
The key thing for us was to get a win first and then to get a bonus point and then obviously chasing netto points as much as we could to put ourselves in a position to get out of our pool. And I think where the reality is where we are currently, I think between ourselves, Ireland and Scotland, everybody can still miss out on the quarterfinal, every single team, all three of those teams, but all three can also still make it. So the pool will only be decided on Saturday.
The match marked a 50th cap as captain for Siya Kolisi, the skipper who led them to victory at the 2019 Rugby World Cup in Japan. While it was a special day for him and his family, Kolisi said it was difficult to take in the occasion as the big Tongans battered their defence.
The only thing I think about is the physicality. They were tough. They were tough. We prepared. The coach prepared us well for that, and they don't stop. You know, you think at a certain minute they're going to stop, but the next guys that come on, it's the same kind of physicality. The best thing about the thing, we got the bonus point, and we accumulated as much points as we could today, and I think that's what made it special.
Pool B, as Nineba explained, is delicately poised. Scotland will need to beat Ireland by 21 points or more, with each team scoring 4 tries in order to dump the box out when they meet in the French capital on Saturday. The Scots will need somewhat of a mathematical miracle to force their way through. Irish centre Robbie Henshaw says they are bracing for a bruising battle against their European rivals.
You know, they're going to come for us. And I suppose now we can see what it means to them, you know, what they want to chase. I suppose what we want to chase as well in terms of getting you know, those 4 wins. So I think, they're going to come and have a go, like they always do. They'll have a plan, and we just need to make sure rock solid and we attack it.
It's been an intense few weeks for South Africa at the tournament. Ninaba says the players now have a few days to recharge their batteries and take a mental break.
But I think in the first week now, give the guys some time off to get away from the game, get a little bit of a mental break, and then start focusing and on things that we can do better. So internally focusing on us, on things that we must improve if we want to stay in this competition to the end. And then once we have clarity who we'll play, then we'll start focusing on the opposition.
South Africa will know for sure where they stand after Saturday. If they go through, they'll face hosts France or arch-rivals New Zealand in the quarterfinals. The quarterfinals take place on the 14th and 15th of October. In the meantime, the Springboks will have a chance to take in the tourist hotspots in Paris before getting back to work. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
Lastly, we head into the boxing ring. Boxing fans didn't know which Saul Canelo Alvarez they would see this past Saturday when he faced off with Jermell Charlo. But he made sure to let them know that he was still able to win in a fashion that does not disappoint his fans. There was talk he was past his prime and even was asked what made him the Canelo of old. To that, he said this.
Yeah, I think this is Canelo. This is Canelo. I'm back. Finally, I'm back. I feel confident right now. I feel great. And I'm so happy because, you know, I didn't feel like this for a long time, but now I'm back.
Alvarez, 60 wins, 2 draws, and 2 losses, won by a score of 119-108, 118-109, and 118-109. The statistics were just as one-sided. Alvarez landed 42 punches to Charlo's 11, almost all power punches for both boxers. Charlo, the unified junior middleweight champ, moved up 2 weight classes to take on Alvarez, and he said,
proud of myself, you know, took a chance, jumped out there strong, right off a hand injury, jumped up there with the best, one of the best guys in the division, one of the best guys in boxing. So my head is held high. I am proud of myself. I've done an awesome job for Lions Only and my crew and my team. And I love boxing, so I'm not going nowhere.
Even though Charlo, 35 wins, 2 draws, and 1 loss, was the one moving up, he is 4 inches taller than the 5'8" Alvarez and with a 2.5-inch reach advantage. That didn't matter as Alvarez promised before the fight, saying his experience would prevail in the battle of the 33-year-olds. Now Charlo is ready to step back, saying he would love to take on 40-0 Terrence Crawford, the reigning welterweight and super welterweight champion. Although Crawford said earlier he wanted to fight Charlo, he tweeted after Saturday's fight that Charlo is no longer on his hit list and he'll be willing to come up to fight Canelo at a catch weight of 168 pounds. Alvarez's performance against Charlo figured to be a measuring stick on whether he could recreate some of his previous magic. There's no doubt that he can. There's no doubt that he can. But the question is whether the Mexican-born fighter can sustain it. Who he fights next is uncertain. WBC President Marcio Soliman has declared David Benavidez will be his mandatory challenger for the super middleweight belt, but Alvarez has not committed to facing Benavidez, a 26-year-old who is 27-0 with all but 4 wins by knockout. If Alvarez turns down Benavidez, the WBC likely would vacate his championship. And that's a wrap for the October 2nd edition of the show. Hope you all have a great day. I'm Muck Bill Yabaro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.